you have questions about digital photography, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Photo Focus. Here's your host, Scott.
Welcome Moore. Back to another edition of Photo Focus, your online source for photography information. Joining me today, we have the very talented and much in demand Rich Arrington back again to help with co-hosting duties. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a very exciting and fun-filled and fact-filled and blah, blah, blah-filled week for the photography world, hasn't it?
Yeah, lots of stuff coming out. It's kind of like our holiday season, 3 months late. All the cool stuff is starting to ship.
Well, let's talk about some of the elephants in the room, and no fat jokes, please. Let's start with the Lytro camera actually becoming real. First thing about that I like is all the 20 or 30 posts I collected by so-called experts, pundits, and analysts who said it would never become real. So that's my first favorite thing about that. Second is it's actually shipping. And unfortunately, they only have like 100 to first send out to some people. And I'm lucky I got mine. I know yours is coming any day. Third, there continues to be much, much, much speculation about what the Lytro does and does not do by people who have never seen, touched, or used one. Your comments, sir.
Well, people will always talk about what they don't actually know. I think that's the joy of the internet. I know it's real in that I've seen you take pictures with your camera and post them, and I've logged in every single day. You know, they're sending out the love is patient emails. Literally, that was the subject line. I'm like, yes, it is. And it's kind. And it's also usually present. So I'm anxiously looking forward to mine showing up. I'm kind of regretting that I didn't buy a second one because I so bad want to start hacking this thing and taking it apart and looking at it. And I know that as soon as I do that, I'm probably going to break it. So I'm going to have to fight the urge to crack the case and look inside. It'll just be the magic little red box. I think I ordered the same one you did, the red model, the nice model. Premium one.
Well, if you're going to go, you might as well go big. Here's the thing I've already found out. It's very tough and resilient because upon opening the box, we dropped it on the floor. So that's the first thing I know. Pretty good. The second thing is it does take some getting used to. Here's a couple of quick tricks for when you get yours.
There isn't a viewfinder, right?
There is a viewfinder. It's just it's the back of the camera, and it's pretty crappy. I mean, I'd say it's the biggest failing of the camera as a camera is this very small, like one-inch square viewfinder. It's very tough to see what's going on. But it's, you know, this is a first-gen proof-of-technology camera in any event. I don't have any doubt that people end up making some cool stuff with this. And once they do, I hope they'll call us here at Photo Focus and we'll publish it. But for now, it's just sort of get used to seeing this way. But I have figured out a couple of tricks. Number one, it's counterintuitive, but use the zoom. So the more zoomed in you are, the better the Lytro effect.
And that would be the shallow depth of field and being able to sort of change what's in focus and what's out?
Yeah, except for shallow depth of field is one of those things we got to stop talking about when we talk about the Lytro because it's F2 all the way no matter what and everything can be in focus or everything cannot be in focus. So the concepts of, you know, the questions I've been getting are, what is this low light performance? What about, what's the depth, what's the F-stop? You have to stop thinking that way and it's hard because I wanted to. You need to just more or less start thinking in terms of 3D photography. How would you photograph a scene in 3D to make it effective? Because everything can be in focus, Rich, at the hit of a button, even though it's shot at F2. Or only one thing can be in focus and you can change that. And that is the thing that everybody's talking about. That's the misconception that this camera is all about focusing in post and taking the fun out of photography. That's just the furthest from the truth it can be. It's to demonstrate a concept and to see if people are interested in interactive photography. But certain ones of us are getting what's called unlocked cameras, meaning they're going to send a special code to our camera that unlocks a myriad of additional features that will eventually be unlocked to everybody, which do include, by the way, full-on 3D photography. With a single
That's pretty amazing. I mean, if you know, one of the things that excites me about this sort of camera is just the ability to create more interactive, immersive web content. So, you know, as you're discovering things or you're looking at products or you're looking at environments, you know, the ability to pull this out. I mean, I've done some 3D photography, you know, getting two DSLRs mounted onto a rig with a prism, with two tripods. I mean, one, it's heavy. Two, you got to critically align them. Three, the prism alone is getting into the $8,000 to $10,000 range just for the cube of glass you put between the two cameras, let alone all the extra post work after the fact. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing what we can be doing in a small container.
Yeah, the nice thing about it, it's very portable. I do wish it had a tripod socket. It doesn't, so this is my call. Somebody who gets a Lytro, please make a little collar that has a tripod socket and send it to me, and I will make you famous to my 118,000 Twitter followers. But other than that, it's very interesting. Now, the other tip I have for you is you've got to have, you must have, you absolutely positively must have a foreground object that's very close to the camera.
If you don't do that, is it just, does it just behave like a regular point and shoot, or does it just do nothing?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, just there's very, the effect that you're going for is not there. So what, in my experiments, and granted, they've been minimal because I've had so much going on this week. But if you zoom in at least halfway to the camera zoom, and I've been finding that something roughly 6 to 12 inches from the camera in the foreground makes the photo very interesting. Now, this is not a technique uncommon to landscape shooters who follow the Ansel Adams and Edward Weston model, where they work with very wide-angle lenses and get very low to the ground and might put a rock or something in the foreground in a stream, and then El Capitan and Yosemite in the background, and all of a sudden El Capitan looks small and the rock looks big. This concept's been around for all kinds of photography, but it really makes the Lytro effect work. So if you get one of these, put something close. You have to have an interesting foreground subject in every shot and use the zoom because it makes the effect better.
That's cool. I think that's going to be one of the things. Now, when you want to publish these right now, I guess I have two questions for you, and I don't want to make incorrect assumptions. I've been looking at the sample images. If you want to make a print with one of these things, what can you get out of it? And the second question is when I publish this to the web, is flash the only option? I mean, obviously we could make static JPEGs, but if you want the animation effect between the different states.
Okay, so here's what's available to my knowledge as of this date. And by the way, I was within 1 hour and 17 minutes of the company's official launch and the product, people were saying, don't do this, don't do that. Well, you know, I'm like, gosh, they're 1 hour and 17 minutes old. Can we give them like 1 hour and 19 minutes? I don't know. But here's what you can do now. Yes, you can make a print, roughly a 4x6, 5x7 print. Looks good. Anything bigger than that falls apart. The resolution is not, we have to think of resolution differently. You want to think of, instead of one big sensor capturing an image, it's basically one big sensor capturing 9 images that create the effect. Based on my computational analysis, I think it makes 9 slices. I have not confirmed that with the company, but I think it makes 9 slices front to back. So you're basically taking the resolution, dividing it by 9.
Cool.
So a 4x5, 5x6, you know, square 5x5s, those are all be fine. As far as hosting it and seeing the Lytro effect, in other words, the work in post, there are 3 choices available to you as of this day. You can post it on Lytro's own site. You can post it through a plugin to Facebook, or you can post it through a plugin to WordPress.
And so it's a little bit of a closed ecosystem, but that's okay. Better that it works when it launches than it doesn't work.
Well, I don't know how. I mean, I would say a closed ecosystem is, you know, you make a picture on Picasa and it has to stay on Picasa or something like that. I mean, you can print these. You can save them as JPEGs to your desktop. You can put them on Facebook and WordPress and Lytro, 3 different places. People are like, well, what if Lytro goes out of business? Well, first of all, let me just give you a little quick tidbit. They ain't going out of business because all of you who follow me know that I'm fairly savvy when it comes to the investment markets. And these folks' Series A round was oversubscribed, so they have no lack of money problem. There's just no money problem at all. They're going to be around. This technology is very exciting to investors, so they're not going anywhere. But, you know, for this to be a complete failure for you after you invested your $400 or $500 for the camera, you'd have to not have access to Facebook, WordPress, Lytro, a desktop, or a printer. And I mean, nothing in life is guaranteed. You can go on a roller coaster ride and one bolt pops and you lose your life. So, I mean, it's reasonably open. It's going to be open more as soon as more people license the technology. But Litro made a conscious decision to produce the first cameras themselves so they could make sure that it worked.
That makes sense. I mean, you know, my guess is that, you know, this is not something that they sat on for a while, but like a lot of innovators, they had really cool tech that nobody else got. I mean, you and I discussed this a little bit before. You know, I look forward to this technology rolling into other types of things, you know, like video and things like that, because
absolutely,
that's perfect resolution for video. And I'll tell you know, you got a DSLR, you're shooting in video mode. Focus is one of the hardest things people struggle with. If you had that ability in post to click to focus, well, that's a game changer. And then for 3D work, the ability to click and adjust will also open up all sorts of options to adjust the convergence, which is how, you know, basically sets the distance between the two eyes. When you've got that flexibility in post-production, then you could accommodate for different focal lengths and also cut down on things like eye strain, making 3D more enjoyable. So this flexibility of more agile acquisition to give you greater options during post is a pretty exciting concept.
Well, here's what I want to do. We recently spent 4 days together here in Vegas in my office producing a book together. The next time you're out here, I want to figure out how we can do is capture the flash footage from whichever plugin they're using, or maybe we'll even get an API from them, and then render that inside one of our movies as just, you know, sort of like you have a still photography slideshow and then all of a sudden there's a stop motion thing. And you could do it that way right away, and that would be kind of cool. Now, I have no doubt that they're offering more plugins soon and they're working with lots of partners. You can bet once this thing started shipping, everybody in the industry, well, I mean, I happen to know for a fact all the major camera manufacturers were already in touch with them. So it's just a matter of what they're going to choose to do from a business model where it goes. But anyway, I just wanted to say it's real. It's fun. It's not a serious camera that you're going to go out and shoot weddings with, but you might shoot one shot in a wedding to do some kind of cool interactive thing, you know, on a WordPress site or something. But, you know, publishing is going to be a lot less and less, as you and I recently committed to, less and less about a piece of paper and more about a screen. And this stuff goes on screens, and that means it can be incorporated with other stuff on screens, and who knows?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool where the whole world is sort of moving towards. I mean, what we're going to see is just, you know, people, I don't want to say that print is dead, but, you know, people don't care as much about print. I mean, I even look in my own house. You know, we've got pictures on the wall, we've got things we've done, but the number of pictures we print versus the number of pictures playing on our television. I mean, you know, let's see what happens when Apple announces the Apple TV with the, you know, the real TV attached. I mean, people come over to my house like, how do you get all those photos on your TV? It's like, oh, it's this $100 box. Oh, and it's been out for 5 years. I mean, this is, you know, we're about to hit a tipping point sort of thing, just like Apple did with podcasting, where they take things that weren't, you know, that other people did, and they're going to make it so easy. And so, you know, this concept of shelling out $600 for a digital photo frame is going to seem so weird. You know, we're already seeing people dropping their iPad, you know, built into the iPad as a photo frame mode. We're seeing people just, you know, leaving these on stands, running through slideshows.
Yeah,
I can't even see people, you know, I mean, printing is valid to a point, but printing is becoming the minority of how most photographs are consumed. And I think it's just going to be interesting. You know, they're obviously onto something, and that is more enjoyable photography in a digital-only realm. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll see how people respond to it. Before we go on, I want to mention ViewBug, ViewBug.com. You can click on the banner on the PhotoFocus.com homepage to get to them, or just type in ViewBug.com. But guess what? We have another contest, a different kind of contest than I usually run. I've run contests like this before, but very rarely. This is a camera-related contest in that you've got to take pictures to win a camera. This is not just a Twitter contest. In fact, it's you got to put in your best pictures. It's unlike most, if not any, photo contest on the web that's this significant. A, there's no entry fee. Let me say that again. There's no entry fee. B, absolutely none of your copyrights are taken. And unless you win or be selected as a semifinalist, you don't give up any license, which is different than every other photo contest I've seen. And the prizes? Oh, yeah, more than $10,000 worth and counting. It's going to run all year, so you got plenty of time. But go check it out over there, viewbug.com. We got a cool photo contest. I also want to mention Animoto, my favorite way to share my work. I just love these people. I got to spend a lot of time with the Animoto crew during the WPPI conference. Very nice people, growing, building into new HD formats into their system, adding and innovating all the time. They're not sticking around with the same old thing. You can get it anywhere from free to $250 a year. Click on the Animoto box on photofocus.com if you're interested, or just once again type in Animoto.com. Well, there was some other news about a little teeny camera that might be of interest to people this week, Rich, and it was the Canon 5D Mark III, the long-awaited successor to the ancient old in the tooth, all more than like three-year-old 5D Mark II. And it's coming out at the end of the month, allegedly. It's $1,000 more expensive than the 5D Mark II.
And people aren't really sure why.
people are pretty sure that there's no reason why, other than because they can.
Well, is that the list price, or is that the street price?
That's the expected street price. Now, it'll come down eventually, just like the 5D Mark II did eventually. And the current 5D Mark II is going to come down an expected $200 to $300 upon shipping of the 5D Mark III, which makes, you know, the spread even further.
Well, you know, if you buy a camera that costs $1,000 more, you'll make $500 more a day, guaranteed.
That must be it. Here's the thing. Here, you know, there are some nice goodies there, and you're a video guy. So shooting video on a DSLR with a 5D Mark II only happened because the community figured out how to make it happen. Canon didn't give them any help. But with a 5D Mark III, this is a video purpose camera. We've got an audio jack to monitor audio. We've got separate audio controls. They're not pro controls, mind you, but they're much better than what we had. Apparently, even better low-light performance. 22 megapixels. Thank God they didn't get involved in the megapixel madness that they did on the D800. It has 33 megapixels. You just don't need that many. Did you look at the specs at all on this camera?
Yeah, I've been digging into it. The you know, obviously, I'm looking at it from the video side, and one of the big features it has that the D800 and the other new camera has from Nikon is uncompressed video out of the HDMI port. Which let me just quickly explain why that's such a huge thing.
Now, right now, because our audience is, you know, their eyes glaze over fast on this stuff.
You have the ability to send out a clean signal with no compression. So it's just like writing a raw file. When you write raw video, it's not going to be, you know, full color range, but you just get more color information and much less compression. So it's better quality. That's also going to improve things. Like, we're seeing photographers wanting the ability to go out that HDMI port to a monitor on set for client monitoring. That's going to make that experience better, too. So I think it's got some really interesting ideas for workflow for monitoring. What I'm still unclear on is there seems to be a lot of confusion over what works and what doesn't work, and they're being a little bit low on the exact details of the specs. There seems to be a really big marketing spin on this camera and not a lot of response to criticism or deeper inquiry that I can find yet.
Yeah, they're using the new autofocus that they're building into the 1DX, and they're touting that as a great reason to get the camera. The 5-digit 5 processor they're counting, that is a great reason to get the camera. And they have beefed up the video all around. They're touting that as a great reason to get the camera.
It's got better sensitivity, right?
Yeah.
ISO?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's going to do really well in low light. There's just no question about that. And those who are of the low light religion will want it just for that reason. But I just don't see the $1,000. Now, am I going to buy one? Hell yeah. It doesn't matter, but it matters to some people. And, they're getting it because they can, is my guess, because there's so much pent-up demand for this. And now, just to be clear,
one of the big audiences they're going after is the video market. And, you know, that $1,000 more is still far cheaper than most video cameras.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think they're taking advantage of the fact that they've got a new customer base that's used to paying more, so they'll get them to pay it.
And they're getting a 29-minute clip length now. And now, as far as the D800, there is no uncompressed out. Is that correct?
No, it does have it, is what I've been told. I haven't verified it yet.
The D800 does have it, and the 5D Mark III has it.
Yeah, and that's why I'm really interested in putting these side by side, because I've been told, and again, this is not verified, is that the Canon is only putting 720 out of that HDMI port, while the Nikon is putting 1080. So
be interesting then.
Yeah, there's been some early criticisms from some of the people like Philip Bloom and others on the Canon model. I've not I've not heard all love and kisses that everyone was expecting. So obviously, though, until they're in our hands
and we actually
have a chance to play, we can just guess.
But here's what I guess I'm going to end up saying about them. Is the 1080 out versus 720 out feature is going to be important to 1-2% of the audience of the camera. I mean, that's a very geeky thing. Guys like you will do it, but the average wedding photographer who shoots a little video isn't going to care. What they are going to care about is low light performance, right?
Absolutely. And I think that that'll make that's going to be where this camera should shine. And obviously, you know, I think people are going to like the fact that all their existing accessories, to me, it looks like everything you might have bought for a 5D Mark II is going to work just fine with the 3.
Yeah, the other thing is that with Nikon making the decision to cram 33 megapixels into the sensor and Canon only 22, physics tell me that the Canon will do better in low light in terms of producing less noise. So on paper, it looks like the Canon is going to be a better low-light camera, which it has consistently been. So that's not a big change. So the people, what I guess is that there's nothing on the Nikon D800 side that's going to make people from Canon want to switch, and there's nothing on the Canon 5D Mark III side that's going to make people from Nikon want to switch.
But do you think it's possible that the Canon could have a software update, or the Nikon could have a software update to back down those megapixels, or is that hardwired into the chip and a firmware wouldn't touch it?
Those are sensor sights on a piece of silicone, my friend. You can turn them off, but they're still there.
Okay.
I mean, the light gathering ability of the sensor sight is directly related to its size. This is simple physics. The smaller the size of the light gathering diode, the less light it can gather. Now, people are suggesting, oh, yeah, but you could turn off some of these pixels and reduce the noise. That may be true. However, then I have to ask you why you're paying $1,500 or $1,800 more than a D7000 to get a D7000 size file. Because that doesn't make any sense to me. So I don't know. I may end up loving them both. I'm getting them both. We'll see. We're going to test them here at PhotoFocus and let you know. I just thought I'd cover it because I'm sure it's the elephant in the room for many of you. You want to hear more about the 5D Mark III. Before we go on, I want to say thank you to Borrow Lenses. This may be a way to solve this problem, folks. Just when they come out, rent the D800 and the 5D Mark III from borrowlenses.com with a nice fast lens and shoot each one of them. See which one you like. That's probably the best way to figure it out because they've got it at borrowlenses.com. They got everything. They got everything you can think of. I bet you can't think of something they don't have. Just give them a call or go to borrowlenses.com or click on the borrowlenses.com banner on the PhotoFocus site. Well, another big news, Rich, it is official. I posted as of the day we're recording this podcast. I have switched over to the Creative Commons license. It is official. Now, it's going to take my staff estimates about 2 months to officially switch everything that can be switched over. We have some images that are under exclusive license that cannot be switched over. But everything new and everything that isn't already under exclusive license will go, and it's all because of Trey Ratcliffe. He talked me into it.
Yeah, I think Creative Commons has some interesting implications. I mean, and I think one of the biggest ones to get out of the get-go that many people don't understand is you're not saying, oh, all my images are free and I'm giving them away. You're just sort of saying, okay, I've pre-identified that if you want to use one of these images for non-commercial use, such as to comment in a blog or in an educational environment, I'm okay with that. You don't have to contact me first. I've pre-granted certain non-commercial rights. Am I understanding your move correctly?
Yeah. What's really interesting is that, you know, I'm going to use a phrase I don't particularly like, but I hear on the internet, the freetards, the people that think everything should be free, complain if there's anything under copyright. They think for some reason I should invest $600,000 to go to Alaska and photograph bears so they can have the pictures. But what this says, that if you do not intend to use – here's the license I'm using. I'm using the Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License, which basically says you're free to share – to copy, to distribute, and transmit my photographs under the following conditions. You've got to attribute the work so that it's got my name on it. You cannot be using this image to make yourself any money. If that's the case, you've got to share it with me and we have to have a different license. And you can't alter, transform, or build upon my work and make a derivative.
Now, let me ask you for a clarification on that, for example, because this is one of the areas that people get a little bit gray on, is if I've placed your photo on a blog where I have ads and that story is drawing viewers in and I'm getting ad revenue, is that a commercial use or a non-commercial use?
There's no gray area there, my friend. You'll be hearing a phone call from Perkins Coie Attorneys at Law to get some licensing revenue coming my way.
Not a problem.
If it's sitting on a commercial site, and like, you know, one guy contacted me before. Well, here, let me finish the story. The only thing that's different about this from how I work in a rights managed situation is that you have to write me contact me specifically for permission to use it in a non-commercial way. I'll give you the permission. I do it all the time. I am not stingy. Almost anyone, I challenge anyone to say that they asked me for the opportunity to use one of my images for free in a non-commercial format, and I said no. I don't think I've ever done it. I always say yes. What this does is, like you said, it just pre-grants that right. But if they want to make money off of it, then they got to pay me. That's only fair. Why should they make money off of my work and not share it with me? That doesn't make any sense. So a guy contacted me once. He said, I just want to use it in our little camera club newsletter. And I said, oh, really? And I said, okay, it's not a big deal. You can use my image. Let me just check you out real quick. And I go over to a site. They charge $200 a year for the freaking newsletter. So
sounds like that's a way to draw viewers in and maybe make money.
Yeah, so they want to use my image in their newsletter. They charge $200 a year. That would not be a non-commercial use. Therefore, this license does not apply, and we have to work with a different license where you pay me.
But things like education environments where they're doing criticism, or somebody doing a article in a journalistic sense, or somebody wanting to just use it for their personal enjoyment as their desktop wallpaper. I'm sure that's your big goal in life, to be the wallpaper for everyone.
I had one guy that wanted to use one of my pictures on the side of his RV or something. I'm like, yeah, cool, whatever. I don't know why, but yeah. Now, the thing is, this is just a license, Rich. So copyrights still apply. The remedy, if you violate the license, is to go back to United States District Court under Title 17 and sue for copyright infringement. So you still have to register your images. Now, here's the thing. Trey is the one who motivated me to do this. Trey Reckless, well known to most of you. He's the HDR king. Very nice guy. Very intelligent guy. Very good businessman. Very creative. Very artistic. Well, he has told me he will start mentioning this more often. He registers all his work with the Library of Congress. Just because he goes with a common Creative Commons license and you can share his work doesn't mean he doesn't register it, because he's going to need that step if he does have a big shot, like, let's say, an Amazon.com or a USA Today or, you know, any well-known brand use his work commercially without paying him. He has to have registered it first. And all standard copyright exemptions do apply to this license. So, for instance, If you would have an opportunity to use this in photographic criticism, in other words, if your job was to teach people photography and you critiqued images to teach them photography, then I don't have any right to stop you from doing that under any circumstance, because that would be one of the things that falls under what's known as the fair use exemption of Title 17. Now, most people claim fair use and it isn't, but that would be a case that would be fair use. So in that case,
the license. I think a lot of people use the term fair use like, it seems fair to me. Sounds favorable.
Well, you can use it. You know, any of the traditional copyright waivers are still available to you if it goes into public domain or, you know, whatever. You need to consult with an attorney if you have any question, because neither Rich nor I are licensed attorneys. We recommend that you contact your local bar association if you want complete legal advice on this subject. Okay, I had to say that because my attorney made me. And speaking of attorneys, well, we're not going to talk about them anymore. We're going to talk about Smug Mug Pro, professional photo sharing, and by the way, great video sharing. If you're trying to sell pictures online, they got an engine for you and a way to show them, to sell them, to get them printed, whatever you want. They work with multiple labs, so you're not limited to one lab, and you set the pricing. It's very, 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 very powerful. Now, I'll tell you right now, it's not the easiest website to set up because it's so powerful, but they're working right now to streamline that, and they do have professionals that can help you if you have issues with that. But go and click on that Smug Mug Pro banner on the PhotoFocus site, or just type smugmug.com. They're great people. Another group, a bunch of people I hung out with, WPPI, really nice people, very committed to photography. Baldy, one of the big shots there at Smug Mug, loves photography, loves big panos. If you ever walk in their office in San Francisco, just huge panos. They're just like us. They're nuts about photography. So they're a good place to go. So check that out. I think you'll enjoy it. What else is going on in the photo world, Rich?
Well, I think we got Photoshop World coming up just around the corner in my backyard here, D.C. That's always a really fun show. And then not too far after that, we've got NAB, which isn't pure photography, but several of the camera manufacturers are going to be there now since we've had this collision of photography and video merging together. So I think between those two shows, we should see some more gear. And obviously, you know, whenever you get that many smart people together in the room, new partnerships start popping up, or, you know, new educational stuff. Without violating any NDAs, I think if you've been paying attention, several major software tools are sitting on the verge, ready to emerge, and that'll be good things because there's lots of stuff I'd love to talk about that I'm anxious to share that I can't quite do yet. But it's going to be a really good spring and summer is about all I can say.
Yeah. It's busy, busy learning time, but listen, Photoshop World is just one of those shows that is not photocentric necessarily, but has become more photocentric over the years. But if you're into Photoshop, Lightroom, all that stuff, it's a great time. Scott Kelby and crew throw on an amazing show. When exactly is the show, Rich?
It is coming up. Let me pull up the exact dates. It actually runs in a different pattern than people are used to. So it goes over a weekend. It starts on Friday, March, I want to say 21st. Let me find it. Nope, there it is. March 23rd, and it goes through Monday the 26th. And the show floor is open to the general public for free on the 25th and 26th. And they have, you know, short classes on there, a couple of different theaters. And then obviously the conference itself runs for 4 days, and there's a wealth of education there, you know, not just on photography, also things like design and video and other topics, but some of the best photography instructors, lots of great classes. I always enjoy sitting in classes on lighting and composition, areas that I continue to focus on. And it's a good vibe. It's a lot of good people. And I really think those folks do a nice job. I don't want to say it's a family affair, but it's got such a good vibe with such a strong community of people who come back year after year that new people always feel welcome. And it's just one of those great shows that has really good energy that I like.
And then, of course, NAB, which we'll probably both be at. You'll be at Photoshop World. I will not, because I only do the West Coast version of the show.
Yeah.
This is in your backyard. You got to drive a few minutes and you're there. So I won't be at that one, but I will be maybe at the one if I'm invited back. And I never like to assume anything, but if I'm invited back, I will be at the one here in Vegas. Even if I'm not invited back, I'll crash the party. What the hell?
Yeah. And NAB is just around the corner. That's, you know, that's a broadcaster show. But as we said, you know, a lot of these cameras are getting in there, DSLRs for photojournalists and for other areas. There's a whole section on DSLR cameras at NAB this year in the central hall, a very large area set up where they've got lots of DSLR equipment and a lot of the people doing the hybrid and the fusion type projects, time lapse, all of those things. So I always enjoy that show. It's one of those shows where everybody brings out the big gear. So while the internet is great for things, if you're looking at stuff like, I want to know what that slider feels like in my hands, or I really want to feel what that tripod's like to move and pan and tilt if I'm looking at a video style tripod, or let me see that lighting equipment and touch it, everybody has all their equipment. It's not just pictures or brochures. You can get hands-on with stuff. And then the little secret that a lot of people don't know about is a lot of people don't want to actually ship that gear back. So if you go to the booth, you can often put an offer in on the show floor model and walk off with stuff pretty cheap at the end of the show.
Well, very good. Well, that's all the time we have today for today's show. We're here the 5th, 15th, and 25th of the month, and you can find us at photofocus.com 7 days a week, where we provide tons of free photo news, tips, reviews you can use. Of course, follow me on Twitter, Scott Bourne, all one word, and you might win a camera. And Rich, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter under RedPixel, RHEDPIXEL.com. And you'll also find me under my personal blog at Richard Harrington Blog. So RedPixel on Twitter or Richard Harrington Blog, either will work.
All right. Sorry we didn't have time today for any questions. We will get many more in on the next episode. Until then, that's all we're going to do today. We want to send you out like we always do, reminding you to go out there and make pictures. Don't just take pictures. We'll see you on the next Photo Focus.